low win rates, excessive discounting, challenging negotiations. Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group. We're an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. This podcast is about one question: how to transform your team into peak performers. If you want the answer, keep listening. If you want it faster, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.
And Stephanie and Shannon, thank you so much for joining us today. We're really excited to jump into the topic today and also bring you a little different approach for our listeners today than if you've joined webinars in the past. We will often have slides that we go through or make it more like an interactive presentation. Today, we're really going to approach this more as a panel discussion, and I'm particularly excited because of the strength of our panelists, the expertise that they bring, and just having a conversation around, you know, how do we make training stick? How do we employ these change management practices that can help improve adoption and behavior change? And it's something that we've been hearing more and more from our clients as, you know, we look at next year and we look at some of the headwinds and how we address and adopt that and change to that. So with that, I'd love to just have both of you introduce yourselves, and maybe you can share just a little bit about how you're coming at this topic, you know, the background as it's applicable, and then we'll get into some discussion questions. So Shannon, I'll invite you, if you could, to go first. Can you tell us just a little bit about your background and how you approach this topic?
Yeah, sure. Hi, Ray. Hi, Stephanie and everybody. Super excited to be here. Let's see. I always start introducing myself with a question for everyone else. And that is, have you ever worked on, just like maybe in the chat, have you ever worked on something really hard, a plan, a project, a training rollout, or a bigger strategy, and then it didn't get adopted by the audience that you were trying to get to do it? I just am curious if anyone else has had that problem.
Boom. Yeah. So chat blowing up here, right? I think we're among friends here. Yeah.
So yeah, that's where my profession lies, my vocation really. In organizational change management. And what that means is leading hearts and minds to adopt new behaviors in the corporate environment for really the benefit of everyone, the company, getting their bottom line, getting that those new behaviors faster, time to productivity when you roll out a change, but also for the employees, limiting disruption, limiting attrition, really studying what works during times of change and what doesn't, and applying that over and over for repeatable success. So I get to do that for my job, and everybody is always super interested in that. I've done organizational strategic change management in consulting, a little bit for Ingram Micro for an M&A in Russia. I did a lot of it at Microsoft for a very long time, 15 years, and I just joined DocuSign. We started this conversation, I was working at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Now I'm at DocuSign, and I'm super excited to be here to talk about this today.
Well, that's great. Thanks, Shannon. And yeah, it's fascinating thinking about your background and the application. And then when we talk about, you know, some of the challenges with sales training, just how applicable and tied together this is, even though we often don't call it change management, but that's really, you know, what the whole behavior change is about. So I'm excited to jump into that. Stephanie, would you introduce yourself and a little bit about your background on this topic?
Thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here. So a little about me, I was a middle child. So I just feel like I kind of take the things on that other my siblings didn't want. I always made the lemonade. I always had to put away the laundry. And I felt like when I went into the tech world, you know, no one really liked teaching the salespeople how to use their tech stack, and nobody liked the migration to Salesforce, the migration from Classic to Lightning. And as the tech stack started to grow, people just didn't like that. But for some reason, I loved it. And I kind of live in that world. I wake up every morning smiling and thinking about how I can just kind of architect this environment where sellers can go from platform to platform. They can execute their workflows. They can find everything they need to find. And it's not such a burden to remember where to go or what lives where, or who said what in the last all hands. but just creating this atmosphere where they can find things quickly and they know exactly where they are when they're in their tech stack.
No, that's great. Well, and several people have responded. We do have a fantastic audience and again, a worldwide group here. So appreciate seeing people from Europe and Australia and Asia. And I think we'll have great interactions as we go along as well. If you do have a question, please feel free to chat it in. Let's keep this interactive. We'll be trying to monitor that as we go along. And we've already had some interactions there. So it's great. And we'll start with the first bullet, that was in our agenda, but we wanted to talk about some of the challenges specifically to sales training that we're running into these days. And I'll say, we have the opportunity and benefit of working with hundreds of different sales organizations. And, it is challenging these days, right? We're looking at economic headwinds. We're looking at both a retention issue and a potential staff shortage, which is kind of in conflict with each other, but we're seeing that as well. We hear a lot of clients talking about doing more with less. So, how do we drive cost out of the business? How do we position the sales team to be able to respond to that? And then we know there are more decision makers involved in B2B transactions every year. It gets more complicated and there's more noise, right? There's more competition. So with all of that, there's a need for sales training, but I'd love to hear from both of you. And Stephanie, maybe we could start with you on this topic. What are some of the challenges you're seeing with sales training these days? How has that changed over the last few years? And, how are you responding to that within your organization?
I think we're seeing a lot of change in a lot of different ways. With the pandemic, of course, with sellers going home, there's the challenge of how do we create a great employee experience and a great seller culture while still being very dispersed? Yeah. And Cisco is a work from anywhere company, and we've got, tens of thousands of sellers and hundreds of thousands of partners that sit all over the globe. So we're doing a pretty good job there of helping, of giving everyone the tools they need to be successful. But I think another big challenge is just the exigencies that we have on the sellers of, in software and in tech, you're not just selling a product. You're not just selling, we've gone from this product selling mentality, which you can blow up the chat about that, about PLG or not. But I think that that's very early 2010s tech to be product led. Then I think that in the late 2000s, right close to 2020, we started getting into this value-based selling, which is selling the value that you're going to be getting as a company. And Gartner actually explained how really the next natural progression is more of this experiential selling. So this is the experience that you're going to have. Our platform stands up against other platforms and our products and our services because of the experience you have working with us. And so I think that as I think about training, it's not just about training and learning what networks and switches do. That just doesn't cut it. It's having to really encompass this culture of saying that by working with us and by selling our solutions, you're creating the best outcome for our customers and you're creating the best experience for our customers. And in turn, that's really giving the best experience to their customers. So it's almost this grandfathered in approach that's required. And that's really challenging to give all that in a 3-week training boot camp that's virtual and half of it's online and half of it's self-paced. So I think those are the biggest challenges. And I don't have answers for everything. And feel free to fill up the chat with any recommendations you have, but those are definitely the biggest challenges I see.
No, and that's fascinating. I hadn't thought about that, Stephanie. Now we need to use experience-based training to teach experience-based selling, right? So a little bit meta there, but it is fascinating to think about how do we engage our audience in different ways and how do we engage our buyers, right? So that they can feel and appreciate what it's going to be like. Shannon, I'd love to get your thoughts on that. What are some of the headwinds or challenges you're seeing training the organization these days? And then we'll get into how to respond to that.
Well, from a change management perspective, again, that's what I bring to this. I'm actually not formally a training professional, but I work with those teams and we really rely on each other. And something that I'd like to point out from a change management perspective is we know from lots of data and lots of insight that in a corporate environment, if you think of a chart where one side is willingness and the other side is ability, I'm able to do it, I'm willing to do it. After corporate training, you might be surprised to know that often you only have 40 to 50% of your people in the able and willing bucket. then the rest are pretty much evenly divided between varying stages of not able, not willing. And then there's some that are highly able and unwilling, and those can be dangerous because those folks can often be influencers and resistors. And then you have folks that are very willing, but they just don't get it. They're not coming across along as fast as others. And so from a change management perspective, that's always the challenge. We have to partner with training teams, first of all, to understand that. And with leadership to understand that too, that training is not a magic bullet. It's not a change management plan. It's one aspect of what we need to in order for a group of individuals to adopt a behavior. And they all adopt it at a different rate. Stephanie probably knows this. And I remember, Stephanie, from your presentation at that conference we were at in October, you do this interesting thing called, I think it's in the flow of work, or and I thought that that was super fascinating. And I think that this audience should hear about that approach a bit, because it seems so so simple, but also really met the challenges of being hybrid, being dispersed, and all chunking. And some of those things. So I just had remembered that from your talk, and would want to make sure that they hear about it.
No, it's a great prompt. And Stephanie, we'd love to have you expand on that, because I think that's really to the next part. So the sales training, I think, has gotten more challenging. You know, there was a great comment from Tony, I think, in the chat about companies wanting to upskill the sales team, but they not necessarily willing to invest the time or resources that are necessary. They want everything to be very sharp and very focused. And I think that's one of the things we're seeing, right? It needs to be outcome-based. It really needs to produce the benefit you're looking for, as opposed to if there's an academic approach or a conceptual model, but they can't apply it, then that's time wasted, right? And there's not a lot of appetite for that. So Stephanie, maybe you could expand on that. It's kind of into our second bullet point of, you know, how does sales training change to respond to some of those challenges? Maybe you could talk about 70-20-10 and you know, training in the flow of work.
Absolutely. So I'm just sorry, I was blushing. Sorry, Shannon. Shannon remembered my presentation. My heart fluttered a little bit. Sorry, Shannon. I'm fangirling over Shannon during this. I'm so excited to be here with her here today. But one thing that I think is really important to know, and I work in a team of incredible learning and instructional designers, but I think it's really important to know that training is an event and learning is a process. And I think that they really confuse the two. And learning can, of course, take place in a formal training event. But just because the training event is over doesn't mean that the learning needs to stop. And so I'm of this methodology where, and this was introduced by Gartner. I did not make this up. I wish I had. But it's called the 70-20-10 methodology, where if you look at your current training program, it's probably very heavily focused on formal training, whether that's webinars, e-learning courses, videos that live in your LMS or content management system. But in Gartner's proposal for 70-20-10, that should really only be about 10% of the content that you provide for the frontline. The next 20% is kind of this tribal knowledge, this learning through others, you know, through mentorships, coaching, and through these experiential programs. And then the 70% is kind of where I step in and what gets me out of bed every morning excited. And that's the learning within the flow of work. And I'm really lucky. I have a fantastic tool. I use a digital adoption platform that allows me to basically be omnipresent across our seller's tech stack. So once they do go through an all hands call with the head of North America sales, or once they do go through this traditional training, the digital adoption platform is right there within the flow of work, kind of their coach that sits on the platform and can help them go from platform to platform to say, this is where you are. Remember this from training. You're supposed to do this as you're prospecting. You know, this is your ICP, or as they're entering content into the CRM. Oh, remember, is this an opportunity for this? You need to also tag this specialist, you know, just kind of coaching them along the way to reinforce what was learned during that 10% of training. And what we're finding as we do that is we're actually really decreasing the ramp up time for these sellers. We're not only decreasing the ramp up time, but we're decreasing the amount of resources that go into this training. With over 100,000 partners, the previous state was just these webinar after webinar and office hours where partners could hop on with these product specialists and learn these workflows and learn these updated tasks. And it was so time consuming and so draining. Not everyone loves to do that. And so I think that what was really important to learn is that we're just able to be there for them. So everyone gets the same message. If the trainer's having an off day, you don't miss out on anything. And you're really able to, you know, see a workflow through to completion, whether you're on one platform or 10 throughout the day. I hope that explains it very well. And I think there's messages coming in through the chats. I heard this through Gartner, but Janet, thank you so much. Please share any more information you have about 70, 20, 10 and keep me honest on that. I really appreciate it.
No, and yeah, that was just a chat clarification there. But I think it's important to, you know, maybe it has been around for a while, but have we been using it and have we had the systems and the tools to make that available? And I think through better coaching and also through things like the platform you mentioned, Stephanie, we're able to really integrate that after the training or as part of the training. And one of the things we see is even with adult learning theory, you know, spacing the training out so that they're applying it in between sessions and then coming back together and having a collaborative discussion about what's working, where the challenges are. So I think that's the, you know, if 70% is in the flow of work, 10% is the formal training, we've probably been doing that opposite, right? And unfortunately, not always getting the results that we're looking for. You know, I'd love to hear from you, Shannon, as well, how you're seeing that change. And one of the things we see is, you know, a greater emphasis on the outcomes. What are we trying to accomplish and kind of the what's in it for me? And maybe you could tie that together. Like how have you seen, I guess, training in general, sales training, if you have any specific examples, but changing and starting to incorporate that, you know, what's the outcome that we're looking for and how are we going to pull that together?
Wow, what a tee up. A couple of things. So just quickly on the previous topic about sort of the challenges of knowledge in the flow of work and what's, you know, difficult and changing about that. Something that we found, like I was at Microsoft and this year we rolled out a new sales methodology. And something that was really interesting as we rolled out this methodology, which is a pretty high level thing, it's really procedural, right? And it makes me think about the difference between, we use these words interchangeably, but there really is a difference between process and procedure. Process anyone can follow, ideally, right? It's something that's just assembly level and you, without actual, a ton of training, you can follow a process. And then a procedure, what is something where oftentimes you might need quite a bit of training. A heart transplant is a procedure. So maybe thinking about the doctor's office as a metaphor, you go in, the person following process is probably not the nurse, but the first person you speak to who takes your insurance card and information and enters it into a system, right? And then the person following procedures, the people following procedures are nurses and doctors. They're using their judgment overlaid on process. And what we found when we rolled out, just back to the point here, after that distinction, we roll out this new sales methodology. And there was tons of training on it, just like you do, right? And the biggest question that came up from all of the sellers in our world, and maybe this happens for you all, is we have so many different types of sellers, customer success, account executives, technical people, solution architects. Well, what's the handoff? Where's the handoff? When does it end? When does my part end and the next part begin? And I think what we learned from that a lot is a couple of things. It's, you know, just as a change management and a cultural change, it's not a handoff. It's like a handhold, right? We don't have abrupt stoppage in what you're responsible for and the next person's responsible for. But that came up a lot when we were rolling out sales training. So I think it's more complex than ever for sellers in these big orchestration models where they're working with other types of sellers, which is something that's context for them that we don't think about enough. That is a really big part of their day. And we think about our training in terms of this concept needs to be rolled out, as opposed to like what is the orchestration? Like they would probably have us live in that space. So that was a big key learning. But the other learning is just culturally, like we all follow procedures. You're not making a process. Your profession is not process. You are paid to be more of a procedure person with putting your judgment and exercising your own accountabilities and ownership. So anyway, those were a couple of big takeaways that we found with that. Mm-hmm. But basically, this is where change management comes in and partners with training, because after the training, people need a lot of practice. That learning curve, as Stephanie mentioned, I really like that, that training is an event, and learning is a process, because that practice and the safety to do things wrong for a little bit, to make some mistakes is important. And change managers help the organization understand that it's not a flip switch and that we need some time and reinforcements and support during the learning curve, during that transition. So those are a couple of things that came to mind as we were thinking about that. But I don't think I answered your question exactly as you asked.
No. And it really gets to, just thinking about the end, like, what are we really trying to accomplish with any change initiative, right? And then maybe we could just transition and talk a little bit about what are some of the components that you see, Shannon, that are critical to a change initiative? Because I think this is where it's interesting to decide whether it's sales training or whether it's technology adoption, but what are we forgetting or what are organizations often missing in that journey?
Oh, well, we are pivoting on the benefits, the company and the corporate strategy instead of what motivates the seller. I mean, I don't want to say coin operated, but they're on quota, which is a pressure, but also they want to get their incentive, right? They want to blow out their incentive plan. So anytime you're working with the sales population to get a new behavior through training and other mechanisms, it's all about constructing something that the what's in it for them has got to accrue to helping retire quota. And that's how I map everything. And then another lever that is wildly underused and considered, and I mean, no disrespect to my training brethren, but we do not differentiate enough content for managers to coach on the new behavior. Managers are an afterthought in training plans, and they should actually be your 100% partner in not only, they shouldn't just be given a precursor and know it well enough to just say, oh, okay, I kind of get it. They need to know it well enough to explain it and coach on it. So differentiated training for them on how to coach on the new behavior, and what expectations are around that. And then of course, aligning with goals. So really it's about coin operated, make it aligned to their quota, leverage the manager, because nobody's thinking about them enough, especially in the training plan, I'm going to be honest. And make sure that you have sponsorship also from leadership across the organization. To these things need to be in place. And those are the requisites that really will take a change from taking years to lag and struggle forward or get adopted in a couple of quarters.
That's great. And it opens up an even broader discussion. And Stephanie, I know we've talked about it as well, is that frontline manager role and how critical it is. Oftentimes they're not even engaged in the training. No. Maybe they haven't even had a briefing, like they don't know. And then they look at it and it's like, well, I don't really agree with that, or I don't support it. Versus, and we know, and this goes back years as well, if we can get the managers involved before, during, and after, and really be part of that change initiative, we're going to increase our chances to success. And they need to have the skills to be able to coach and reinforce. The problem is we keep piling more and more activities and requirements on those frontline managers, and we're not as good at taking things back or prioritizing. But Stephanie, I'd love to get your thoughts. So I know kind of multi-parts here, but one, the manager's role and any other change management kind of critical principles that we're missing when we look at those kind of training initiatives.
I think I'll touch on the managers in just a second, but I think one thing that I worry sometimes that enablement teams are built of traditional, and I come from the instructional design world and the training world, but I worry that we're built of too much instructional design and trainers, and not so much of individuals who have come from a sales background. I feel like I need to go spend like 12 years on quota before I can really do my job correctly. And I'm waiting for someone to go make me do that and I can come back in about 12 years. But one thing that I think is there's the concept of knowledge in the ADKAR model. So awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, and then reinforcement. And I feel like enablement teams that are built up of those trainers and instructional designers, they have that knowledge piece down. Everything you need to know is right here. But then there's that ability portion. And where I notice the gap in ability is it's really stark when it comes to the actual execution. Because every time I go through training, I tend to sneak in because nobody knows who I am still here at Cisco. I'm like, let's put it in the flow of work, everyone. Like, hi, I'm here. And I get there and I go through the training and there is no action. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't put, like, you're not telling me to go and do anything. You're telling me how this new program that Cisco's doing is great and you're going to love it. And this guy in the Midwest loves it and it changed his life. But where do I go to execute this? And everybody becomes astronomers. Like, they're like, what do you mean? Like, and that's fine. Not everybody needs to have an expertise, but I think it's so important to have somebody asking that question where we need the key component. We've got the knowledge, but now we need to give them that ability to execute. And that ability to execute, you know, maybe it looks as simple as a job aid that shows them how to get into their tech stack and execute. Maybe it's as extensive as a digital adoption platform that follows them and ensures that they reach that. But I think that that's why so many training teams and enablement teams hold their own ROI to training completion. And sorry, this is, I'm not trying to turn this into a TED talk, but whenever I ask how different teams are goaled, especially enablement teams, they say, oh, we had, you know, this, we did training in this many theaters, this many geos this year. We had so many people, you know, smiley sheets and butts and seats. But I say, like, how many people actually did it? How many people actually sold and brought revenue based on this? And it's crickets. And so I think that that general next phase of enablement that change management practitioners really get, and why it's so important to have them as part of your enablement strategy, is that ability and that reinforcement to make sure that they're actually doing it. So there's not training 6 months later because nobody did it, but that they're actually being pushed to do it. So when we think about, you know, these sellers aren't really being told how to go and execute. So if the sellers aren't even getting that message, I can imagine the first line managers aren't getting that message either. So I think it's that combination of knowing how the first line managers are supposed to be coaching on how that execution is done. And just that really is that missing piece that I think can fill in a lot of those gaps. I hope that answered that.
No, I think it's spot on and really fascinating the amount of support for the frontline manager role, which I think is critical. And also the what's in it for me. And Shannon, back to your earlier point, and you touched on it as well, Stephanie, the what are we trying to accomplish with the training? And how does that relate to the individual? So if it's retiring quota, and you know, that's a pretty lofty measure, like it may take a long time to do that. Can we really correlate it? But what are those interim measures, right? Have we booked more meetings, right? That's pretty discrete. That's something we can measure. Have we grown the pipeline, right? Are we improving velocity of a deal through the cycle? We can start to capture that or improve our win rates. I mean, we look at a number of different measures, but we often ask the question, well, why do you want to do sales training? And it's like, oh, well, because, you know, we want everybody to have the same language or we want to improve everyone's skills. Why? Right. So what? Who cares? And so I think that's such a key point. And then are the managers on board to support and reinforce to the same outcome? Because they're getting measured on, did their team achieve quota right at the end of the day?
Yeah, sometimes I think training should be on a quota. And I'm being jocular, but what I noticed, and I'm just going to straight talk here, is the way that a lot of times it feels is that a training is just an assignment or project by the training team that they need to complete and deliver. And then just like Stephanie said, the things that they're looking at and sharing with the business in terms of how they measure is really coverage. Or in some cases, just completing the actual development of the training and deploying it. Oh, we did it. It's out. And then I'll ask, well, how many people took it? 1% of the desired population. is this, it costs $1 million. I don't want to digress too much, but, and then it's just this chunk of training that was beautiful. We've hired paid actors and it sits there and nobody's taking it. And part of it is because one of the things I always tell organizations doing change management is training can't be decoupled from the organic nature of work. And just back to the in the flow of work thing, the principle I always try to follow is just this like sort of three J's. And I tell teams this because these are the pitfalls and this is the opposite of them, but training needs to be just in time. I'm an adult. I got to go do that procurement thing. And I forgot because it's been 3 months and I did it since I did it. There needs to be contextual training just in time for that moment. It needs to be just enough. I had a help desk request at my new job and they're really responsive, but they gave me three different possible answers on how to solve my problem. I need one. just enough. And then just for me, just in time and just enough. So like J3 is the principle that we always follow from a change management perspective on training. And most training organizations are totally on board with that. But what's happening at an epidemic rate in organizations, let's go back to the less is more, fewer people, austerity, is this shadow training that's going on. And we're not even talking about formal, but in organizations more than ever before, Paul from marketing puts together a training for the sales field. And you go into it, and as Stephanie said, it's a lot of slides. It's this great strategy, but there's no call to action. There's way too much information for an adult learner to take away any key behavior changes. It's not been instructionally designed. There's no knowledge measure or Kirkpatrick kind of how, you know, from it was well organized and it helped me do my all the way to it helps me do my job. Those things are missing at an epidemic rate as people hold meetings informally to knowledge share or knowledge transfer or give a presentation. And then the organization calls and counts that as training. So that's my soapbox and my TED talk. Stop calling that training. You leave training with a new behavior. And yeah. We need to really get crisp about that definition, I think.
No, I think that's so key. And it does go back to the frontline manager role. And I want to touch on that again in a bit. But I just read a report that talked about which managers are most effective. And on one extreme, you have the one who's always on, who's always listening, who's there to answer every question. And at the other extreme, you have the person who's connecting the dots, right? Connecting with people with resources within the organization, but not doing everything, not joining every sales call or not riding to the rescue. And the connector turns out to be much more effective, right, at helping their team hit quota. Find the resources, right? Be that servant leader that says, well, let me figure out how to do this. I'm not going to do it for you and I'm not going to be there. But that resonated when you mentioned that. And, you know, there were a couple of questions about the frontline manager role, because obviously we talked about how important that is, but that they're too busy, they're overworked, they're already overwhelmed, and then we're asking them to do even more. So how do we get them engaged? And I have some ideas, but I'd love to hear from both of you on this topic. Stephanie, maybe we can start with you. You know, what can we do to empower the manager and get them engaged and maybe have them prioritize on the things that we think are going to be really helpful for this change initiative?
I put this in the chat, but I think it's really important. One thing with the change management strategy is the concept of that preferred sender. And of course, we know those sellers, their preferred sender is that first line manager, but who's the first line manager's preferred sender? You know, who are they reporting into and what are they doing? Could we, you know, it needs to be that top-down approach. Are those directors of sales going to those managers and holding them accountable for what they need to do? And not in a, oh, why didn't you do this way, but in a, how can I free up your time? How can we free up time, like coming together and creating this leader who's able to free up his time in order to do that? I've seen so many quotes on LinkedIn where people are saying, oh, if you're not coaching, if these first line leaders aren't coaching, what are they doing all day? I'm like, are you kidding? have you talked to one of them yet? Like, I think this person hasn't talked to a first line leader for a while. But that's where I would go first. I know that if I want to hear about any sort of performance that I'm lacking or any sort of new task that I have to do, I want to hear about it from my leader. And it's the same for these first line leaders.
Yeah. And I think that is the question to ask. I mean, and even maybe without the attitude of, well, what else are they doing? But really ask, well, what else are they doing? And not to judge it, but to say, and I love, and I know there's some tools and people really looking at this, looking at the calendar and saying, well, is this an internal or an external meeting? Is this a one-on-one or a team meeting? Are we coaching or are we selling? You know, what does that start to look like? And if the manager is spending all the time doing, they're never going to scale, right? And they're never going to have time. So how can we pull them back into those important, but maybe not urgent, but to give them time to do planning and strategy and coaching and training versus they're the ones that have to close every deal, resolve every contract issue, fight every fire with the customer. So Shannon, I'd love to hear, you know, from your perspective, what else have you seen ways of engaging those frontline managers or maybe helping them prioritize on some of these things that, that we think may be more important?
A couple of things. So the first thing is a sprinkle. It doesn't have to be intensive. Sponsorship and management. Sponsorship a little more so, but think about leveraging the manager to come in and welcome everybody to the first 5 minutes of the training. And then maybe they go, they've had their own briefing, and then there's people coming in and you have a leader or manager at the right level for the group in the training itself, just to kick it off. We, in change management, we do a lot of kickoffs. We, in our sponsor roadmap and our manager, what we ask of managers is things like, will you guys sign up to volunteer to come and kick off? We have 11 trainings planned. I need 11 managers willing to come and kick it off and say one or two or three things that matter to them. So really practical stuff like that, using people's time wisely and sprinkle. And we do that also with sponsors. But with managers also, I mean, sales managers, if individual contributors in a seller's quota, sales managers pipeline, speak the love language. we had to get people to use digital first selling tools and account-based marketing insights and all that like never before, because the pandemic accelerated all of that. And it just wasn't landing. Like, it was all this corporate strategy stuff. And then we would go in the field and everyone would be like, what's digital first selling? And you'd say, oh, well, you know, it's like prospecting. Oh, okay. Or, and then they were like, we don't prospect. That's for people, you know, not us. And then we would run into sort of having to refine that message to, oh, no, propensity. This is about account propensity so that you can develop your, and then, oh, yes, I care about account propensity. My point is, don't speak your language, speak theirs. I'm not a seller, but listen to me right now. And I learned all of that in the last year being part of the MSUS Microsoft sales subsidiary. It's very important to get it into their language so we create programs that the training event itself adds pipe. We show them what to do with these accounts. We actually have people go in and do exercises during the call itself. You can't always get that, but when you can, don't leave it on the table. So practice events that add pipe, that's always going to be very interesting to a manager. But also, it's the third thing is it really needs to align to the manager's goals. So you don't just get to come from the side and put a new priority on managers. This needs to be a tone from the top, and the top needs to have the priorities. And some people might argue that priorities should not be plural, but you know, we all have a million of them. Two or three big priorities, they need to be on the manager's performance, goals, commitments, however you write it in your organization. When you can map those things, then you have managers listening because they know now they have to do it and you're showing them how. So those are just a few ideas that I had, from really practical to more just structural.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of support again within the chat. And if you have other questions, please feel free to add them in. You know, Stephanie, I'd love to get your perspective as well on the sponsorship piece, because I've heard you speak on that and we've chatted about it before. But the sponsor is more than just the talking head, right? Or maybe the video kickoff. But what do you expect from a good sponsor? And what else can the sponsor do to create that awareness, that need, and support the initiative?
I expect a sponsor to be brutally honest, because coming from my background, I have an idea of what can work. I have an idea of what might resonate. but I also have this kind of extra gene where like, I want to put like a dancing koala in it, or like I just want things to be like exciting and engaging. And so I, you know, not always a dancing koala, but sometimes, and I need someone to say that does not resonate with the field, whether it's a dancing koala or whether it's a workflow that I want to automate instead of take somebody through manually. You know, do we want to teach Amanda Fish? Do we want to do it for them so they don't have to worry about it and it takes away time? I just want the sponsor to tell me this is what the field wants, and this is what the field will do, because they're the ones closest to that. And then I think Shannon, you said this, that if they build it, they don't fight it. And I think that you said that at the ATD Cell conference, and I thought that is brilliant. Like, so if we're building it together, they're not going to start tearing down the kitchen because they hate the backsplash. Like, they put up that backsplash, they helped grout it, and they're going to, I'm going through a renovation thing. It's all, but they're the ones who are going to be supporting it because they helped build it. So I think that's a really good point, but yeah, just the brutal honesty, even like, I hate the colors type of thing. Like, even just down to the nitty gritty, I love the honesty that comes from those sponsors and those leaders.
Yeah, that's great. Anything you'd add to that, Shannon? There was a question too about the difference between a, you know, executive sponsor and just the frontline managers. And I think they are different roles, but just getting, you know, the executive sponsor engaged, or what do you expect from them?
Yeah, a sponsor. So a manager is the coach. They are there sort of for the ability. They help, and they really come in the ability phase and make sure that from a change, whether a change is a technical or tactical or cultural, the manager is there to support the employee to throughout the process, to have a safe place to understand the change and ask questions and raise objections. That's from great. That phase to making sure they get into the training and that they completed and they've taken away the key things that they need to know, to carving time in their schedule for practice and following up with them and asking about how they're applying it. That's the manager's responsibility. They're the coach. The sponsor is more like the owner of the sports team. if you want to think about, I don't usually use sports metaphors, but I'll try this clumsy one. The sponsor is more like the person who is the executive who's everyone who has the change audience reports up through their organization. So hierarchically, they have the organization, but as close to them as possible beyond that. Like, if you have a sales team that needs a new behavior, then probably the VP of sales is the right sponsor for that, not the VP of marketing, not, you know, the VP of operations or something, which we try to do all the time, weirdly. So a executive sponsor is really the person that makes sure that the resources, the prioritization and the strategy around this change or this initiative are a priority for the company. And they are more useful in things like, they're really useful in things like kickoffs, awareness emails and communications. They have a role in reinforcement after the change has landed. They help negotiate and uphold measures that we've agreed upon to define what adopted is of a new behavior. So they have different roles, and there's a whole bunch of great stuff on this. If you go to proside.com, tons of articles on that. I'll see if I can find one while we're talking today.
No, that's great. Yeah. And I think it's so important to think of that again, more than just the, you know, the person that kicks off the live session or has the video, but that sponsor, and I think we should, one, we need to identify them by name, you know, in the charter, and then we need to work with them to identify and specify what we're asking for. And if they can't sign up for it, you know, I think that's an indication, but we need to make it very clear, this is what success looks like and why we need sponsorship. And if we can't find that person, I think it's a pretty big red flag. And so often it's like, oh no, you know, we can't get their time. They're too busy. And you're exactly right, Shannon. I mean, if the executive sponsor is in training or sales enablement or somewhere other than where the end quote is, I think that makes it more challenging when push comes to shove, right? Because we are talking about where are the priorities coming from? Where's the budget or resources coming from? And even things like, well, they don't have time to coach. Well, that's on the sales leader to be able to help prioritize that for them, right? To reinforce that message. No, we do expect you to coach each person, you know, once a month and provide some evidence of that or whatever that looks like. So I think that's where the executive sponsor really comes in after, during and after the training to keep it alive and keep it going.
And the excitement and the recognition and the making it fun. I mean, we don't, it's not always just reinforcing with the stick, right? It should be three times the carrot, right? And you really need those sponsors for that because, and it doesn't have to cost a lot. Like people, you don't need a trip to Hawaii. A lunch with the leader can be a great incentive for somebody to have adopted a new, or a team to have kind of bridged the learning curve on a new behavior and become a bright spot. I'm a big believer in bright spots also, which is a team that's doing it well. What are they doing? And instead of trying to just kind of tackle everything as if it's a monolith, always look for the bright spots and see what you can replicate. And that's not mine. That's Chip and Dan Heath from a book called Switch, which if you haven't read and you're in this field, would be just a great read on your next flight. Switch by Chip and Dan Heath. I'll put it in the chat.
Great. Another great recommendation. I love the resources coming out of this. And, you know, I think that that part of, you know, classic change management, right? But what are the quick wins or what are the stories that are coming out of the training? And can we use that to help build momentum in the organization? And it's one of the reasons I really like collaborative learning where it's spaced out. And, you know, I mean, we use Intrepid, but there are a lot of platforms that do that as a way of having them show proof that they're applying the skills and then collaborate with each other to say, you know what, I use this approach and I got access to the executive and I closed the deal. Let's celebrate that and share that and, you know, use that to gain momentum and pull in. So I think you're right. We need to make it a positive and celebrate those successes when they happen. So I'm looking for, and we have a few more minutes, so happy to open it up to questions. I know Tony asked one, and you know I don't know that we have any definitive answers, but asked, what do you see happening to training budgets in the current environment? Are budgets coming from different business areas? And Stephanie, maybe we could start with you. Do you see budgets changing, or at least within internally within your organization, are there changes in how that's coming?
There absolutely are. And, you know, every company is shaking things up right now. We're seeing layoff after layoff. It's a really, maybe just my part of LinkedIn because I post roles every week. But I know at Cisco, we're really redistributing how we're going to market. And the platforms that we see is really strategic and the offerings that we see is strategic. And teams are shifting and things are really, really moving. And so training has to change with that as well. And onboarding and everboarding. And I think that when I keep hearing things like decrease ramp up time, get people up to speed faster. And what is it they say that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing you've always done and expecting different results? I think that everyone's kind of having this come to moment where, sorry, I don't want to say that, although it is close to Christmas, but we're all having this come to moment where we're deciding like we cannot keep doing these 3-week onboarding courses and expecting a shorter ramp up time. Like we didn't get that 3 years ago. We didn't get that last year and we're not going to get that this year. So how can we shake things up? And that's where I come in because I love to shake things up. I put on Creedence Clearwater and I jam out to it and I just try and shake things up like a rebel. But I think that that's where the change is going to be happening is we're going to start to think of what is training? How can we do it differently to get a different result? And budgets will really shift accordingly as we're able to just determine that.
That's great. Well, I'm just perusing here to see if there are other questions here. We'll give it a few more minutes and really engaging.
I have a question in the Q&A.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I understood. Maybe you all can help that training continues to be based on what I've heard today. Do you call that coaching? And why didn't you push that today? So I'm not sure. I mean, we certainly make a distinction between, well, and I guess to your point, Stephanie, training, learning, and coaching. And coaching, as we define, can be either skills-based, like let's identify where the gaps still exist and how do we help you get there. There's deal coaching, which most managers feel pretty comfortable. Hey, what's that opportunity? Let me help you close it. And there may even be more, you know, kind of strategic or pipeline coaching about how to close deals. curious if you have a different interpretation, either of you, or a response to Linda's question.
I think that when I think about training, I think when I want knowledge is handled by training, you know, skill is handled by training. And then, but when I think about real behavior and certain skills, those need to be handled by coaching. So I would go to different, I would consider that to be a different skill set that I would go to for coaching. Mm-hmm. I think that would probably be what I do, particularly around negotiation and how to have these conversations with customers. I think that there's lots of tools coming out right now, like conversational intelligence that mm-hmm. gives you really great insight into your into what's happening during these conversations with the customer. And that is one of the best coaching opportunities you can have. So considering opportunities like that for coaching, and of course you're learning as you're coaching, but when I think about the traditional training, like we talked about today, and how to support within the flow of work, I think those are more, campaign based, and all these different requests coming in from leadership on how to sell and what to sell. So I think they might be a little bit different topics and different things there.
I yeah. agree. Like, and who does it? Because ideally, training is delivered by a trainer. Somebody who understands adult learning, somebody who's got experience in delivery, somebody who's been trained to train that. And a coach is the manager, right? I mean, at least that's in the organizations, in my experience, that's the big distinction. And the manager doesn't necessarily have to be a knowledge matter expert on everything to be a good coach at it. So you pivot the training for managers to be like, what are some questions you could ask your people in your one-on-ones to elicit this new behavior? Like, those are the types of things that you do to shift the manager's content and training so it's differentiated. Because a lot of times what we do is send the managers to the same training as their people and expect that they're two different audiences. Managers have a different role in this. They need to understand the basics, but they mainly need to understand what data is available to me to coach this. What is there a dashboard where I can see the compliance of this new thing? Those are the things managers need to know about. And that's where I think training departments, you know, and it's in a time of sort of austerity that we're all sort of facing, you know, I think it's not just training departments, but everywhere. Maybe it's a time to make that case even stronger, because we need to lean on managers probably more and just prioritize more fiercely.
Love it. Love it. And absolutely. I mean, we always try to provide a checklist or coaching guide or some sort of tool the managers can use after the training. But it's spot on, Shannon. We should not expect them to be professional trainers. And I think there's often a challenge when we give them a, you know, presentation and say, hey, go train your team. And they end up telling stories, right? Or they do it however they think. Though I think, to Stephanie's earlier point, you can certainly take somebody out of the field and teach them to be a professional trainer, right? Yeah. And have the skills. And I think that's really a great way to approach it. You know, there was one other question about measuring outcomes and the training outcomes. And I think we touched on some of those, but I did want to mention, you know, talked about Kirkpatrick, right? Did they like it? Do they feel like they can apply it? Are they actually making some behavior change as a result of it? And one of the things that we've been doing that doesn't fit in, I'd love your thoughts and then we'll wrap up, but is the confidence shift, right? So thinking about, are they more confident performing those skills now than they were before the training? And do they feel like it's going to make a difference? Because the business outcome is going to take a while. It takes a while to fill up the pipeline. It takes a while to retire quota, Shannon, to your earlier point. But in the meantime, can we figure out whether it landed and whether they're able to apply it? Let's wrap up on that topic. And also, if you have any other closing remarks, but Stephanie, do you have any thoughts on that, on measuring, you know, success and anything you're doing differently?
Absolutely. So because I have that digital adoption platform and a strong analytics behind it, I'm actually able to see if they reach certain outcomes. You know, not everything. A lot of it is those conversations with the customer that aren't tracked by something like that. But I'm able to see if they are, you know, tagging opportunities that need to be tagged, or, you know, calling their sales engineer and bringing them into things. So we're able to see that. But one thing I think has been even more important is I put little surveys in different areas. So as they're looking at their pipeline, as they're looking at their forecast, you know, does your forecast suck? Or, you know, do you hate this? You know, just asking them, even making it again, a little, not irreverent. What's the word I'm thinking of? A little casual, not irreverent, but making it a little casual to say like, hey, yeah, sure. I'll answer this real quick for you and let you know. Because when you're asking them that, when they're at that point, you're going to get a much better response than after they've just consumed a bit of training. So even considering when you're polling, you know, asking the audience what they think, I think that's just that other level of evaluation and makes you a lot more apt to close that feedback loop. So the next time they come back to their pipeline, you can come back and say, hey, have you tried this? You know, you said your pipeline sucks. You need more help generating leads. Have you tried this? Have you looked at this new ICP? Or have you thought about prospecting this way? So that's just my idea about, you know, closing that feedback loop and being able to provide that support for them.
The market is changing, making sales skills more important than ever before. How to transform your team into peak performers? If you want the answer, plus free resources for podcast listeners, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.